Welcome to Recalculating America. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America and has been named the best small business book in the Independent Press Awards competition. Each Recalculating program is dedicated to helping small business leaders add profits through efficient growth. During every Recalculating program, experts will give listeners useful information about starting or growing their small business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all whom offer you ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Well, Dan, I tell you, we have a great guest today, Dr. Chris Cates, who's a newly created Wine Raisin, and we'll get into that, is a crunchy superfood snack that I found when I first tasted it to be extraordinary, and we had to have him on the program. Dr. Cates, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here and to talk to you and your audience.
Well, we're going to start simply. Doctor, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your product, and where people can learn more about it.
Well, thank you. As Don said, I am Dr. Chris Cates, and I am a board-certified cardiologist. I'm somebody that you don't want to see in the middle of the night during when you have a heart attack. But my mission and goal in life is to try to prevent people from having heart disease, and that is the genesis of the reason that we developed this company. And what we have done is everybody on the planet knows that a glass of wine is good for you, and I, like many of my colleagues as cardiologists, have been telling patients for years that you need to drink a glass of red wine every day, and that prevents having heart attacks. And more studies have been done on actual wine and wine grapes than almost any other food in the world. And we have recently tried to take what is the essence of wine, the wine grape, and create a superfood snack out of wine grapes, which we specially dry on the vine to super concentrate all the health benefits into the wine grape itself. And then you eat the crunchy superfood wine grapes either separately or on salads or other things. And these products are not only tasty and have a sweet and crunchy taste, but they can almost make any food a superfood by adding them to them.
Well, what's your website?
Our website is Raisin, but not spelled like the normal raisin. It's a play on words where Galileo had said about wine that wine is sunshine held together with water. So Ray, R-A-Y, the rays of the sun, with Zen, Z-Y-N, the health benefits of eating good whole food. We combine those two words to say Raisin, R-A-Y-Z-Y-N, and our website is raisin.com. If you go there, you can read all about our products, all the health benefits and comparisons between our product and other health foods in circulation, as well as a lot of the history and background on wine and how it's healthy for you.
Well, where can people buy your product?
Well, it's easy. Online, you can buy it at raisin.com, but also if you're an Amazon Prime member, we're Prime eligible, and you can buy it at our Raisin, R-A-Y-Z-Y-N, Amazon storefront. And we're in approximately 1,500 locations nationally and soon to be at a store near you. We also, on our website, have a store locator where you can put in your website or put in your zip code and see which stores in your area we may be in. We are in national distribution with UNFI and KeHE, which are the big distributors. And we're also about to be on airlines, and we're on ski slopes and in corporate offices of places like Google and Microsoft.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is your product considered a liquor and under liquor law, or is it a snack?
Well, that's a great question, because I get asked that a lot. Because obviously one of the negatives of drinking wine is you can't do it at 8 o'clock in the morning without raising eyebrows at work. Through the process that we use to take the water out of the wine grape, we harvest the same wine grapes that go into great wine, but we immediately take them and put them through this patented process, which basically reverses nature's flow and pulls the water out through the pores of the wine grape, super concentrating all the polyphenols, which is a medical term for the flavonoids or the antioxidants that are in wine, and it concentrates it within the skin and the seed. Most people don't realize that it's the skin and the seed of the wine grape that imparts all the health benefits into wine. The color, the flavor, the longevity of the wine, as well as the health benefits.
Keep going.
So our product has no alcohol because it's not gone through fermentation. So it is not a liquor. It is really a unique new fruit that is the ultimate superfood.
I'm going to, having tasted it, knowing how well it is, and that's why you're on the program, I'll turn this over to Dan because I know he has some questions.
Well, Doctor, your last comment saved our relationship because I have a sensitivity to alcohol, and I can't take alcohol without having some really bad stomach issues. So the fact that there's no alcohol means I can eat this. So thank you very much. Fascinating concept. Is it applicable to any other fruit, your process?
It's really not. You know, I get asked a lot, why didn't anybody think of this in the past? And that is because it was quite challenging. We spent 3 years of research determining how to do this correctly. We're also in the wine business. My son lives on a vineyard in Napa, and our family produces a very high-end wine. In fact, this is a family business that we started because we have passion for wine, we have passion for health, we have passion for sustainability, and we wanted to pull all those three things together. So we spent 3 years in research and development figuring out how to take wine grapes fresh off the vine and not have them start to ferment into alcohol and into wine themselves, and take them, handle them carefully, and immediately put them through the process so that we can preserve and concentrate all these bio-nutrients and make them shelf such stable for at least 2 years. So our product, you could leave on the back of a camel for 2 years, and it would be as good as it is the day you bought it. So it's a very, very complicated but a unique process that allows us to preserve all the effects of wine and, again, have no alcohol or other negative things. We also have 20% of the daily fiber that's in the diet, and we package our product in a small package, which is equivalent to a glass of wine, the number of grapes in a glass of wine, and a bigger bag, an 8-ounce bag, which is equivalent to a bottle of wine as far as the number of grapes that would go into it. So you can eat your wine in a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, but with no alcohol and no negative effects of alcohol.
Doctor, I have some more questions. First one that comes to mind, the difference between red wine and white wines. Do you prefer the red grapes, the grapes that produce red wine versus white, or you get the same benefit out of both kinds of grapes?
Well, that is a excellent question, because commonly people think of white wine having less of the good things like antioxidants to prevent heart disease than red wine. And so classically, red wine is what is recommended. But the way white wine is made, the grapes are crushed with the skins and seeds, and the juice is made, and then immediately the skins and seeds are removed, and white wine then ferments on its own. Therefore, it's not exposed to skins and seeds, so it has less of the antioxidants that are pulled out of skins and seeds because it has less time to contact. Whereas red wine, the skins and seeds are left with the juice for a period of time during fermentation. So the medical term for that is the red wine elutes. That means pulls out of the skins and seeds the color, the flavor, the health benefits, and the longevity, the thing that keeps wine on the shelf for 20 or 30 years for those big red wines that people collect. So that's
so
the difference. In our situation, we take the actual fruit, so you're getting all the benefits of the skins and seeds. The key is in the skins and seeds. So we have created a way for the first time for humans to eat wine grapes and eat and consume the skins and seeds of wine grapes, which are probably one of the most healthy things you can put in your mouth.
So as a family business that owns a vineyard, and you bottle grapes, bottle for wine, and now you've got the new fruit. Are you having to make decisions about whether you're going to decrease the number of bottles so that you can increase the number of packages you can make?
Well, that's another good question. Our wine is called Sagacia. Sagacia Vineyard, and it was a vineyard designate for Hall wines, which means all the grapes came from this one vineyard that goes into that very high award-winning wine. So we use a few of the grapes from our vineyard, but most of the grapes we get from the vineyards that go into all the great wines of Napa. So we can become the final common pathway for grape farmers if they can't sell their grapes to wineries, we can accept those grapes. So we're actually in many ways helping out the farmer, and we're creating a sustainable piece to the wine business. And in fact, a couple of years ago, the Food Marketing Institute and the Grocery Manufacturers Association honored us at the Global Sustainability Summit by having us as one of the innovative companies that is changing an entire food industry, that being the wine business, and making a superfood out of what would otherwise not be utilized. So that was very much of an honor for us, and so we're very proud of that. So we gather grapes from all over California, and we hand harvest those grapes, and then we turn them into wine raisins or cabernaisins for the Cabernet grape. That's Cabernet raisins. Chardonnaisins for Chardonnay grapes or Chardonnaisins. Merlot grapes or Merlot raisins we turn into Merlaisins. Again, a play on words. And then our newest product is chocolate-covered Cabernet grapes or chocolate-covered Cabernaisins. And that's really a double dose of antioxidants, which you get through the dark chocolate. And then, of course, the Cabernet grape skin and seed that's inside the raisin. Just almost a guilt-free indulgence. And we're very excited about that product. And that product is going to be on airlines soon.
Okay. So would your process, would a Concord grape produce similar benefits?
It would not, because the Concord grape, although it has a good skin, the seed is too large and would probably not be edible. In addition, it has a lot of pulp in the center of the grape, which does not have as much of the antioxidants. In fact, the USDA database that we utilize in looking at the varying differences of antioxidant content, the Cabernet grapes, the Cabernaisins that we have, are about 10 times that of a black grape or a Concord grape in antioxidant potential. And about 30 times that of wine, believe it or not. And about
do I have time for 40 times
that of green tea.
Do I have time for one more? Do we have to go to a break?
We have to go to a break, Dan.
Okay.
But we'll be right back, and then we'll let you ask your question. Fascinating interview. But first, a word from our sponsor.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're here with Dr. Chris Cates. He has a wonderful product called Wine Raisin. And Dan, back to you.
You know, we've been asked recently by a number of people how can they listen to past shows. And if you go to recalculating.biz, you'll find a link to iHeartRadio, which will allow you to go back and listen to shows that you didn't get a chance to finish or never heard. So we encourage you to go there, recalculating.biz. Now, back to the doctor. Sir, I have another question for you. As you might have heard in the introduction, I'm a registered investment advisor, and I've been managing money for almost 44 years. And I listened with great attention your answer to my question about using your premium wine grapes into this product. And I'm wondering if the decision that you're making is driven by the process. In other words, I don't have to use, if I'm going to use a Cabernet grape, I don't have to use a grape from a vineyard that only produces X numbers of pounds or tons of grape. If I'm in the Cabernet family, I don't have to use the highest quality to achieve the product. Is that a fair statement, Doctor?
Well, yes and no, in that with wine, the grapes frequently come from very small vineyards, and the most premium wines come from very small vineyards where they cut a lot of the grapes about a month before harvest, so that harvest can concentrate the final flavors into the remaining grape clusters that are left on the vine. Interestingly, we did a research project where we took what's called the green drop, which are those grapes that were otherwise going to be thrown away, but from the same premium wine vineyards that make the $1,000 bottles of wine that collectors keep. And we took those grapes, and we were able to take those grapes and put them through the process and make incredible Cabernaisins that were specific for very high-end vineyards. So the process can be done with any grapes. And in fact, there's less difference, we think, between the flavors, because we concentrate all the flavors, than there would be in wine, where, again, through the fermentation process, the wine pulls the flavors indirectly out of the wine grapes. So we're actually kind of the opposite from wine. We're wine is a shadow of our product. And our product is the pure product, which is the wine grape itself.
Now, Doctor, there are some people who would wonder, through the concentration process, is that bottle of wine in your package that's the equivalent of a bottle of wine, how does your package in price compare to going into the local wine merchant and buying a reasonably good bottle of wine? How does it compare in price?
Well, you can buy our product retail either on our website for right at $10 for a what would be an equivalent of a bottle of Cabernet wine. And I would say most people, their price point for a reasonably good bottle of wine would be, you know, $20 to $30. So we're actually cheaper than the wine that it's made from, which is kind of funny. But more importantly, you can put this on a salad or on your granola or on your kid's yogurt in the morning and make almost any food a superfood, giving the benefits of wine to that food. Or a lot of chefs are using it as glazes on halibut or ham, and it's really getting picked up by a lot of the food service as an inclusion in other products like granola or superfood mixes. Our product's becoming one of those products that I think will change the way we eat because we are really starting to look at what we eat and how that impacts our health. And that's why we're excited about wine raisins and Cabernets and Chardonnays and Merlets, because they really can bring the vineyard to everyday life for every human being.
Dan, let me jump in with a question. You say about $10, but if I buy a package, do I eat a whole package every day? Or is it half a package?
He wants you to eat at least one package a day, Don.
Well, you know, the bigger package that I was just talking about that was an equivalent of a bottle of wine is 8 ounces. 8 ounces of fruit. And it's de-stemmed fruit, so it's pure wine raisins or Chardonnays or Cabernets. We do make smaller packages that are $2.99 retail, and those are equivalent to a glass of wine. So that's an easy open and eat one of those a day, or put it on a salad, or put it on your ice cream, and that's an easy way to get healthy snack into your diet. We've had interest from the military also because, you know, obviously military needs a very shelf-stable snack food that can go out into the battlefield. And our product is so shelf-stable that it can tolerate any heat or cold and wet or dry conditions and still be quite good and very healthy with a lot of nutrients and a lot of fiber, which is important for our military.
Well, one more question, Dan. I'll turn it back to you. But and I've just lost the question. But what are the you're in a breaking new territory. You're doing a lot of new things. What are the two or three things you've learned from your experience from being a food entrepreneur?
Well, the food business is a complicated business, and it. In many ways has a disalignment of incentives of getting products into customers' hands and getting the education to customers in a timely manner as to when they're really breakthroughs in new foods. So if you're coming out with the 18th different colored tasted marshmallow, that's very easy. But sometimes when you're coming out with a groundbreaking, revolutionary new food that has never existed in the past, the system isn't built for easy education for the public as to what that new product is. So that's been a little bit of a challenge. But on the other side, one of the things that's been a real success is that UC Davis, which is one of the premier nutritional study universities in the United States, has selected our product, Cabernets, that's Cabernet wine grapes that we dehydrate on the vine, to go into clinical trials, randomized clinical trials to prevent heart disease in humans. These are the same people that did the studies on wine 20 years ago and showed that that was beneficial, and 10 years ago that showed that chocolate was beneficial, dark chocolate. They now are so jazzed about our product, the Cabernet, that they are in clinical trials using our product to prevent heart disease in women. That's groundbreaking and almost never heard of in food. So we're very excited about that sort of thing.
Doctor, we've just got a couple of minutes, and I want to follow up on this because I think what you're talking about is important. I know that my internist and my dietitian have talked to me and have convinced me that grapeseed extract is something that I need to take every day because of its antioxidant properties. But it sounds like what you're offering is even more beneficial than grapeseed extract. So in the time that we have left, I would like to hear from you about what quantities people should be taking of this every day. Not that I'm trying to oversell, but I'm trying to get a sense of a routine. And if I have problems today, do you believe that this research study will illustrate that your product will, in fact, restore heart health? I know that's a lot to talk about, but
That was a number of questions, and I'll try to answer those in sequence. First of all, you know, grapeseed extract has been, you know, thought to be important. But one of the problems with any extract is that when you take the substance and the important things in grapeseed extract are what's called flavonoids, or antioxidant flavonoids. And that's a chemical that prevents heart disease, and it prevents brain disease and Alzheimer's, and it prevents colon cancer and other things. When you expose flavonoids, or these polyphenols, which is the category of food product that is, when you expose that to oxygen or you remove it from its natural whole food matrix, it is not sitting next to a protein that is required for the body to understand the flavonoid and absorb it. That's why there's so much variability when people take grapeseed extract or any other processed bio-nutrient that is not in a whole food, because the body has adapted over 10,000 years to absorb things that are good for you, and the only way it knows to absorb things is to absorb the compounds that are next to each other in tandem, so that the body doesn't absorb poisons and other things that are not good for the body over the 10,000 years that man has been a hunter-gatherer. So that's why, in a long sentence, why food extracts don't necessarily have the desired effect on health that we would hope that they do. We still suggest that people use them because it's better than not getting them. But what we tried to do with this particular product and in whole food in general, the reason whole food is good is it's in its what's called intact whole food matrix. And when it's in its intact whole food matrix, the body can recognize it, and therefore it can be absorbed and go to the organ where it needs to have its effect, and it does so with consistency. That's called bioavailability, which is one of the major research projects in food science these days. So that's why this product, we think, would be better than grapeseed extract, number one. And like rust, oxygen, you know, degrades compounds when they're out in the air. Because our product, it's basically inside the grape that's not exposed to air and it's dehydrated, then there's no...
Dr. Cates, I hate to cut you off. You're fascinating. But we have to move on to our next guest. And we have to invite you back to talk more. I know I learned a lot. We're talking with Dr. Chris Cates. He's the inventor, the president, I don't know what to call him, but of Wine Raisin, which I don't know about you, but I'm going to go out and buy.
Yep.
Dan, what do you think? And we got
to
say
we have to move on, but Doctor, I enjoyed you gave us an enormous amount of information. I'm going to buy it, and thank you for joining us. And maybe we can have back after you get the results of that study. So Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's an honor, and we're so pleased that our product was highlighted with the Nexity Award as the finalist for the best new snack in 2017, and we will be anxiously awaiting the results of this study, which we think will be groundbreaking, not only for our product but for food science in general as a new way to think of food and health.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Dan, we have to go to commercial. Then we'll be back with our next guest.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late-night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Well, Dan, our next guest, I'm really pleased, and I know you're going to be pleased, because he's one of the foremost exponents of Christian values in America today. It's Thomas Purifoy, Jr. He's the head of Compass Cinema, and I'm going to let him and you talk to each other. First, we're going to ask him a little bit about himself, and then, Dan, take it away, because I know this is going to be one interview you're going to enjoy. Welcome, Thomas, to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, and your website.
Well, the company Compass Cinema, one of the things we've tried to do over the years is develop materials, video materials, that can be used by Christians really to strengthen their confidence in Scripture, understanding more about a Christian worldview, see how those things work in terms of the relationship between education and Christianity. And we've most recently done this in a new film called Is Genesis History that was released in theaters on February 23rd and is now being sold on DVD around the U.S. and the world even.
What's your website?
The film is website is isgenesishistory.com.
Thomas, this is Dan Perkins. Welcome to the program. Do you have other films, and do you have a corporate website?
Yes. So what we've got is our company's website is Compass Cinema, although we actually sell all of our stuff through a company called Compass Classroom. So CompassClassroom.com is where we sell all our products, such as we did a series on economics with R.C. Sproul Jr., talking about the way that economics works itself out in the Christian worldview. We've done a series on American history and modern history with a guy named Dave Raymond, really looking at how the Christian worldview is the best explanation and best way to understand how history has worked over the years, how God has guided it along, and so forth. So our goal has been to provide lots of different materials along those lines.
Thomas, is the demand for Christian films waning or growing?
Oh, I think it's growing, and you can see that by the growth in the faith and film market. A friend of mine who runs up the faith and film side of a major studio talked about how his successes in his films have grown year by year, and the folks in the studio take greater and greater interest. I mean, obviously, this is not a Christian studio, but the studio recognizes that there is money in this, and in a sense, money is a sign of success. If people are buying tickets, if people are buying DVDs, then there is an interest in what those DVDs are saying.
So have you seen significant growth in revenue on a year-over-year basis on your film projects?
Well, we have just gotten – this is our first time to be involved in a feature film project. Our products in the past have been more curriculum-based. And so we've aimed more at the homeschool market. And this is our first time to do something with a theatrical and DVD release that is more of a, again, a feature length. In this case, it's a documentary. But it's been it's done well. That this particular film, I believe, was the highest grossing film in the U.S. the night it was released. It was a small film, and it was done in on a Thursday. But it did do well and has been one of the higher grossing released films for one night event. So I'd like to say it did well in the minor leagues.
So I was fascinated by what you were saying when you said you started in the homeschool market. Is that because you didn't perceive to be a viable market in public sector schools?
No, we were never really interested in that. I mean, to be honest, the job right now of the public educational system is to try to educate people outside of the Christian worldview. And it's intentionally set up that way. So I think that a lot of parents realize this, which is why they seek out things like private education, home education, and so forth, in order to provide a Christian perspective and a Christian worldview for education. So we chose homeschool education, quite honestly, because my wife was starting to homeschool our girls, and a good friend of mine was a Latin teacher, and so one of our first curriculums was a little serendipitous, and that we said, okay, he's a Latin teacher, we need to do this, why don't we do it? So one thing kind of led to the next, and I think we have about 11 curriculums that we're selling in our store. Many are ours. Some are from friends of ours that have made some that we think are great on things like logic and say something like Western culture. But I think that the homeschool market gives a producer like us the most opportunity to cater to the Christian market and really provide distinctively Christian products.
So do you have a situation where do you believe, based on your demand, is the homeschool market growing or staying about the same or shrinking?
Oh, the homeschool market is one of the fastest growing educational movements in the United States. I mean, I think it's probably a few years old, the statistic, but there was at one point it was growing 7 times faster than any other educational movement in the U.S. And so when I think that we ran some numbers recently and that there were officially, or probably maybe unofficially, because not all homeschool parents register all their kids, that there were probably more homeschool kids in the state of Tennessee than there are private school kids. And this is their number
and
of states where this has happened.
Okay, and you believe, I don't know, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I'm just reacting to what you're saying. There must be some belief in the part of some parents that they do not believe that the public sector education is producing the kind of results that they as parents want to see in their children.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair thing to say, that there's a lot of people that are not Christians that don't have a reason for, you know, a Christian desire for a Christian worldview and are pulling their kids out of the public sector. I mean, let's be honest, the public educational system in the United States is an abysmal failure if you look at it as a whole for the past, I don't know, 100-something years. I mean, a guy like John Gatto says it was intended to be that way. He was the New York City Public School Teacher of the Year in his 1991 address, The 7-Lesson School. He identifies that there are structures in the public educational system that simply don't enable children to learn well. So those are functional problems. And then you add into the curricular issues where I would say as soon as you start trying to teach children truth without any reference to divine truth, well, then you're in trouble. You're going to end up in some meaningless spot. And so I think that once the post-modernity and the higher education system, which is generally, you know, it leans toward Marxism, they've taken over the public school system since the 60s. And so when you see what they talk about, it's no wonder that, you know, the biggest issues right now are whether we can adjust the pronouns that our kindergartners use to refer to boys and girls. I mean, this is bizarre. It would even non-Christians educating kids in the teens and the 20s would have looked at this and said, this is just a total waste of time. So I think a lot of parents look at this and see their kids, whether it's Common Core and a lot of these just, you know, really quite silly ideas from an educational perspective. They see that it's they're basically, their kids are just treading water for year after year after year. And that you look at the kids in homeschools, you look at the kids in private schools, and they're doing better. I mean, sure, there's some fine, there are some okay public schools, but we're talking as a whole. And when you look at the amount of money they take in, enormous sums of money. I mean, homeschoolers, just in Tennessee, I think it's like a Tennessee kid gets $8,000 to $9,000 a year is what the state pays. And the average homeschool mom's paying like $500 to $1,000. And the education's better. And it's out of pocket. So anyway, that's just a simple economic measurement that the public education system is a failure.
But if you look at that and you say, okay, using your words, you believe the public education system is a failure, it's a failure because of a poorly developed curriculum, a social bias that they're trying to create, whether it's a Common Core or whatever. They're trying to change, and you talked about changing nouns in first grade. What is
the
objective of the people?
To transgender.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
No, that's fine.
I'm just asking the question to find out what you believe is happening in the public school system that is forcing, by your words, an increasing growth in homeschooling with better results. What is it that's in the curriculum in the homeschool that is not in the public school that's making the difference?
Oh, I don't necessarily think it's just curriculum. I mean, I think that I spent a couple of years as a director of a school, and everyone that goes to school knows that it's not simply really what's in the books. It's how the teachers teach, and it's the structure of the school. So I would go so far as to say it's the interpretation. Yes, if you added a Christian curriculum, would it help? A little bit. But a lot of these are functional structures. They're systemic in the way the public education system is set up. So just think about it. If people want to have small classrooms, well, you don't get it any smaller really than a homeschool setup where your mother is kind of directly addressing stuff. Even if she doesn't feel like she's qualified, many children, just simply pulling them out of probably a negative social environment or a social environment of distraction, begins to change the way they learn. And so the issue is not looking at just books and what's in them. It's looking at how does pedagogy work and how does it work most successfully. And so our current system is based on the Germanic system that I think Bismarck put together, this idea of creating a group of people that would be subservient and work. I mean, it's one teacher in this very Platonic method telling students what they're going to think, and they move from class to class to class to class. And as Gatto points out, well, you can only learn in 45 minutes and not any longer or not any shorter. It's, you know, Think about the bell and Pavlovian structures. You know, the bell's off, and so now we reject everything. You look at the smorgasbord approach in terms of, well, you go from basically, and this is the same issue as the so-called university. It's really not a university. It's really all these ideas. You go from biology to English to math, and no one's going to talk about the relationships between them. What I'm saying is this is rotten at the core. And most Christians think, wow, it's just, you know, the curriculum. It's not. This is pedagogically, it's a failure, and it goes all the way back, really, until the beginning of the 20th century. It's just taken all this time to work itself out. I mean, heck, this is why they were writing books in the 50s called Johnny Can't Read.
Yeah. Don, do we need to take a break?
Why don't we take it now, because I'd like to then follow up with a question. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Before you hear this, or this, or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
We're back with Thomas Perifoy, Jr. He owns Compass Cinema. We're talking more about homeschooling, and I'm going to ask a controversial question now, which was just thrown across my a computer from on an email from someone. Thomas, there seems to be a complaint by some minority groups that homeschooling seems to be a white, predominantly white world, and that the books and everything seem to be pitched that way. What do you say to that?
Well, I'd say that, well, I mean, at least if any of the classical conversations that my children walk into, and let's put it in perspective, we're in Nashville in the middle of, you know, a fairly quiet community. And yet you've got, I mean, some of my children, when they went through it, the African-American children, Hispanic kids, there were a number of nationalities represented, and racial groups, nationalities being, there were kids that actually weren't Americans whose parents had their kids in this little homeschooling group. So I think that that is probably a misnomer. What I will say is that it reflects the community you're in, and most of the communities hold together. But I could go across town and find a variety of different racial groups that are in homeschooling. Now, that's a different issue than that of the curriculum. And I think that, what most people don't realize is that the homeschool market is a highly decentralized, free market economy. And so what's happening is that people are writing curriculum for those who will buy it, because there's no one subsidizing this curriculum, but no one's going to force schools to do it. So they have to, each curriculum company has to work and be purchased by the parents. So as a result, it's going to make curriculum that reflects what those parents want as their body of folks who need it. So I would just say it's a natural result. It's not intentional. It's just a market force. It's like, there's a good reason why makeup companies have ads that basically target women all the time. And men are like, well, why don't they have more, you know, ads for men doing makeup? Well, that's not their market. And certain types of women are going to be their market. And so they're going to draw their, whatever they make, whatever they do is going to be aimed for them. Just the same as video games are aimed for a certain demographic. So I think that's an important thing to remember, is that there is no government structure within the homeschool movement. So from an economic perspective, it's a non-interventionist economy. It's truly free market. So it's simply responding to market forces.
Well, do you think the, I use the word in my perception of the word Christian. Do you think that also has become a pejorative word in America today?
I do, unless you're a Christian. so I think that,
well, I know that.
I think that there are there is an intentionality to move that direction. And it really goes back. I mean, our area is film. If you look at this, there's a real strong move in the 60s and 70s to do that from a film perspective. And so I think that we forget how in media, we don't realize how influenced we are by the media we consume. And so there has been an enormous push by Hollywood and those who do it, both to mainstream certain views that they want to, you know, uphold, whether it's homosexuality, transgender, the environment issues, all this stuff, and then many other things. These are the things that are pushed as the positives, and the negatives are usually pushed as, you know, some Christian group that's, you know, oppressing the poor or whatever, their, you know, stupid minister, you name it. This is what has been pushed, and so the result in the larger society has been to, you know, oh, we're going to accept us. And so I think that that combined with a dereliction of duty of many churches to probably teach people, there has been a general movement toward evangelism, which is fine and not bad, but unless those who are being evangelized are being taught the Bible and taught a Christian worldview, then it's not going to, I mean, it'll just not going to last very long, and they're not going to know how to engage the culture. So take, for example, Del Tackett. He was our host in our series, our film, Is Genesis History. His contribution of the Truth Project, which came out about 6-7 years ago, is a fantastic example of how do you reengage the church worldview-wise, and that's why he made it. I mean, over 12 million people have seen it, but that's still kind of a drop in the bucket when you look at the number of Christians in the United States. And so I think that the pejorative nature of Christianity is comes from a two-prong, both outside and inside the church. We're both responsible, and there's been a push against us.
Dan, I have one more question, then I'll turn it over to you. How did you get into this, all of this?
How did I get into this?
Yes.
You know, providence, you kind of fall into things. I was always interested in being involved in filmmaking. And this is, I mean, education is a little bit like, you know, if you're in the military and you say, hey, I want to go be involved in flying, and, you know, everyone thinks of jets, and otherwise you can, like, you know, end up with a P-3 looking for submarines, kind of going slow over the ocean. That's a little bit what we're doing with education. It's not nearly as exciting, but it's functional and needed. And so I think as we got into this world, interested in film, we realized there was a need to create products that could be used by mothers in a way that, you know, had a kind of quality to it. So in that sense, we decided that our choices of products would be ones that would advance the kingdom of God from an educational perspective. And so although it's a lot less lucrative, and it's certainly a lot in some cases, it's can be exciting, but some of it's not as exciting. We think it's very important that the next generation be well educated in these areas.
Couldn't agree with you more. Back to you, Dan.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes, so thank you, Don. Thomas, I wanted to raise a question in follow-up to a previous answer of yours. You're talking about homeschooling as a reaction to the decline in the value, the perceived value of the education in the public sector. Yet we have another phenomenon that's growing all over the country, and that's charter schools. And the people that are most interested in the charter schools and have the greatest response primarily are people from the Black community. Do you have charter schools in Nashville?
Oh, we do, and that's a great example. So let's take charter schools. And so that's another phenomenon that I think is also a very interesting one in terms of this. So we have a good friend of mine, our guy I've known, started the KIPP Academy here, and they've been here 20 years. It's a fantastic charter school, one of the first in Nashville. The charter schools were fought. Metro Nashville schools pushed against these guys for a decade trying to stop them. And what I think has happened is that many of these communities basically, and they were basically working with the local African-American community. And yet the Metro schools did not want them to be and really pushed against them in a way that was in some cases quite shocking how they would try to push them out of business. However, the parents of these children who in many cases, some of these parents really did not feel themselves in a position to homeschool. Many of them may not have had high school degrees themselves. And so let's be honest and say, sure, if you've got a college degree, it's going to be a little bit easier to homeschool than it is if you don't have even have a high school. I think a charter school is a very important outlet in giving parents and giving, be quite honest, getting out of the establishment system. And you know you're out of the establishment system when the establishment, the NEA and the local schools go after you. Well, that means you're probably doing something right.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking with Thomas Purifoy about his recent movie and education in the United States. And Don, you have any one last question before we move on?
Yes, I would like to, because we just have, you know, you, Thomas, how do you decide on a subject for you know, your films, and what has been the reaction from people?
Well, I guess take our last film. I mean, we chose this because we think, I think, in particular, that in the world of creation and evolution and origins, there is a movement in the church called theistic evolution. I mean, it's been around since Asa Gray's friend Darwin started writing him about it back in the 1860s. But the point is that there is a movement of theistic evolution pushing into evangelicals, thinking that, well, I can adopt evolution and an old earth timeline that shows everything coming from a common ancestor as something compatible with the Bible and Christianity. And it's simply not true. But there are a lot of Christians out there who probably are not as aware of either both what the Bible teaches and what science teaches, meaning there's a lot of these ideas of evolutionary thinking are just that they're simply wrong. And yet they're taught as absolute truth, and we've proven them. We felt it was necessary and important to demonstrate that there is the Bible teaches a positive case for creation and the flood, and that's a reasonable case, and it's one that is very congruent with the biblical witness. And Christians around there need to really take stock of what they think in this area and push back against this theistic evolution that is starting to, I mean, really honestly, it's like an early stage cancer in the church.
Well, Thomas, we're out of time. Tell us the name of your movie and where can people get it?
So the movie is Genesis History, which is our film about creation and the flood. It can be, I mean, you can get it anywhere, Amazon, iTunes, and then on to find all the places, Answers to Genesis, Creation Ministries International, all the creation ministries, you can go to isgenesishistory.com. That's the best place to go, is isgenesishistory.com.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
Now, Dan, another word from our sponsors.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Should I grow my business or stay the size that I am? One of the most difficult decisions about a small business is, should I try to grow it? And if I want to grow, what is the best way to do it? If you look at the internet, you can find lots of advice on how to expand your business. So here's your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Go to the SBA.gov website and you'll find 10 ideas of how to grow your business. They're not in order of importance, they're just 10 ideas. Some may be more suitable, others may not, for you and your business. The one that struck me was, add another store. My brother-in-law started with one pizza shop, and over the last 15 years, he's grown to 5. You may not have a storefront, but a service business. So look at your competitors and see if they might be willing to sell or merge with you. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on 2 wheels or 4, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
We're back live, Dan, and we're about to end the show. But what did you think of our two guests today?
Well, they both were fascinating guests. We had just a contrast in such two different interesting subjects, the wine raisins and then education. I mean, those are really diverse subject matters, but our guests were good. They were very articulate. They answered our questions, and I thought they were pretty good. They were terrific, and we're going to have the wine guy back, and when Thomas gets his next movie out, we should have him back. What were your thoughts, Don?
Well, I really felt that I'm a little biased because I managed to taste the wine raisins at the fancy food show, which, by the way, if you're ever in New York when it occurs or San Francisco in January, you should go. It is a fascinating show with almost 3,000 exhibitors. And
wow,
it is fascinating, and you see people like it, like Dr. Cates, and I generally just feel that it's fascinating. I'm very happy to have Thomas Purifoy Jr. on the show. I think it's time that we support the at home teaching and the Christian movement. It's important for the future success of this country. We're almost close.
I agree.
So it's about time to say goodbye, Dan. I'll say goodbye from Don Mazzella, and it's your turn.
And if you missed some of this show or you want to listen to a past show, go to recalculating.biz and load us up and listen when you're in the comfort of your bed. This is Dan Perkins, and thanks for listening today.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.